Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We begin the hour with a look at the importance of life and history and culture in the middle of America. John Lauck is the author of From Warm Center to Ragged Edge. It's a look at the erosion of Midwestern literary and historical regionalism and an impassioned call for its revitalization. John is the founding president of the Midwestern History Association. He's the associate editor and book review editor of the Middle West Review and an adjunct professor of history and political science at the University of South Dakota. He joins me now in the SDPB studios at USF. Welcome, John.
Always a pleasure, Lori.
Let's start with the beginning of this book and the beginning of John Lauck, in a way, because you talk about your upbringing, and I don't think we've ever discussed that before. Tell me a little bit about your childhood growing up in the Midwest.
Well, much like you, I spent much of my life in South Dakota, Minnesota, or Iowa. Yeah. My particular roots can be traced to a little farm about 3 or 4 miles to the south of Madison, South Dakota, in Lake County. And when I was born, my folks were farming there, and they themselves had grown up on farms near the little towns of Winfred and Junius, which I think Junius maybe has 2 or 3 people living there now. Winfred probably has 6 or 7, but they have a beautiful little church in Winfred where they have a great fall supper still. So they are very much products. My parents, Dale and Pat Lauck of Madison, are very much products of this old rural Midwestern agrarian culture that fewer and fewer people are experiencing given the decline in the number of overall farms. In places like eastern South Dakota and western Iowa and southern Minnesota, this used to be a place where there was many 80-acre, 160-acre farms. And because of that, these little towns, which are mostly wide spots in the roads now, would have vibrant main streets, and they would have active civic centers and active schools. But with the declining number of farmers due to the increasing size of farms, they just aren't as vital as they once were.
Hmm. When, at what age did you start realizing that was different than how other people lived? And at what age did you start realizing it was important that it was different from how other people lived?
You know, I think we had a sense of it in the 1980s because of the farm crisis. I can remember going to Pier. I can remember this very vividly and participating in these big farm rallies, at least a couple of them in Pier. And after one of them, the governor, Governor Janklow, went to Washington with the entire delegation of the South Dakota legislature to try and promote policies that would help farmers. But I think in those years, it began to dawn on you how special and fragile this way of life was. I can remember the movie Country being released probably in 85, 84 or so with Jessica Lange. Mm-hmm. And I can remember old, stoic Midwesterners who probably never shed a tear in public in their life, having to leave the theater because that movie was so wrenching. And it is still a very powerful movie. Jessica Lange and Sam Shepard. Sam Shepard, a Midwesterner, by the way. And I can remember a suicide of a classmate of mine, or suicide of a classmate of mine's father who was losing his family farm. So I think there was certain amount of consciousness of it. And when I got to college, I traveled around a fair bit and worked in Washington, D.C. for a while. And that helps you see other places and realize how unique the place you come from is and how much it shapes you and how deep your roots are in a particular place.
Hmm. When did you decide that you wanted to make a life and a career here in the Midwest somewhere? Do you always know that, or did it take that trip to D.C. to sort of cement it in your mind?
No, I don't think that was decided until many years later. In fact, I interviewed at several places in New York and Washington, D.C., and I thought of taking a few of those offers over the years, and I guess I was always drawn back here. I remember during one particular phase when I was trying to decide what to do, I was visiting South Dakota and a friend of my dad's passed away. And he was a great guy, very gregarious. Everybody knew him in town. He was sort of the town wit. And I remember thinking that, you know, this really had a major impact on my father. And, you know, I should stay here and I should be close to my family. And I'm very glad I did, because we have little kids now and they love living here. And we just did the traditional South Dakota family vacation. We went to the Black Hills and we went to Bear Country and we rode horses and it was fun. Yeah. Except for the trip home when it was 112 degrees.
And then the kids are less joyful. Yeah. Yes, we had the same 4th of July sort of experience, went out west and did some hiking, and it's important to show your kid the state. Let's talk about the book. From Warm Center to Ragged Edge, there's a little bit of Nick Carraway in there. Is there not in the title? Is that
exactly.
Harken back to him and the Great Gatsby.
That's right. Nick Carraway, the famous character from F. Scott Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby. Of course, Fitzgerald grew up in St. Paul, Minnesota, and he left and went off to Princeton. And I think during that experience, he got a very good flavor of regional distinctions, how much Princeton was different from life back in Minnesota. And I think he used that distinction to great effect in The Great Gatsby. And The Great Gatsby, people forget, have a couple of important Midwestern characters. Gatsby himself, we forget, I think most people forget, came from a little struggling farm in North Dakota. But the focus of the book and a lot of the attention in the book is centered around Nick Carraway, who left Minnesota. He went off to the war, went off to World War I, and he experienced, you know, Europe after the war. And he thought, I can't go back to Minnesota. That would be too dull. And I need to live in New York, and I need to live in Long Island, and I need to establish a business here. And in the end, as we all know from the book and from the movie, he has a change of heart about what he sees in New York, and he decides that things are pretty good back in the Midwest, back in what he called the warm center of the world, and that is the basis for the title of the book.
All right. So in the book itself, let's talk, let's jump into sort of, you know, the center a little bit, early center, and say, you know, when did the Midwest fall off the map in the literary and as far as history and being studied? There was a time where there was a golden age, and then there was a time when nobody showed much interest anymore.
Yeah, the book does kind of follow this arc, this rise and fall story. And the rise or the early days of this golden age, as you say, can be traced to this era in the late 19th century through about World War II. And that's when there was a very active cadre of Midwestern writers who made a major impact on national culture. And places like Chicago were centers of literary energy. And not just Chicago, but places like the Twin Cities and Detroit too. But not just culture. Also, politically, the Midwest was very strong. A lot of presidents came from the Midwest. The Midwest was the economic heartland of the country. Places like Detroit boomed, and Cleveland boomed, and Akron and Youngstown. And all these places that we hear about these days in the context of decline and ruin were then flourishing. And they were very active centers, and they drew in people from around the country, including many African Americans from the American South who took jobs in these industrial towns in the Midwest and, you know, gave rise to the jazz and blues movements of the 20s and 30s. A lot of that developed in the Midwest during the interwar decades. And so from this very active period of time, we saw a rather rapid decline in the years after World War II. Culture tended to move to the coasts. There was more and more intellectual criticism of the interior of the country. There was a greater focus on the nation's global burdens and its commitments in many places around the globe, in Europe and in Asia. So the Midwest kind of lost its place. And then in more recent years, as we already discussed, the farm crisis and deindustrialization further weakened the region.
Intellectual criticism from the coast. What's that based on? What are writers and leaders actually criticizing about the center of America at that time?
Well, one of the things I explore in the book is this notion of a revolt from the village. This is a term that was dreamed up by a writer for the Nation magazine in the early 1920s. And he used this term to describe the literary output of a number of then famous Midwestern writers, Edgar Lee Masters of Illinois, Sinclair Lewis of Sauk Center, Minnesota, Sherwood Anderson of Clyde, Ohio, etc. And what this writer did was to categorize these writers as critics of the Midwest, and the label stuck. And for many decades, everyone assumed that anyone with any literary talent in the Midwest just wanted to get out, and they didn't see much of value in the region. So a couple of years ago, I went back and re-examined this theory just because I found it interesting and I wanted to write more about the Midwest, and I was working on these projects on Midwestern history, and I discovered that this theory or this interpretation is deeply flawed. Many of these authors actively pushed back against this idea and said, we never meant to attack the region. We had no interest in being apart from a revolt from the village. This is just the creation of a literary critic who didn't know what he was talking about. And as I examined what they were saying and their criticism and went back and read their works and the entirety of their works, not just one or two and not just sections of a particular book, I found that they're right. This is not fair. Most famously, I suppose, would be Sinclair Lewis in his book Main Street, which maybe a few people still read in American literature courses. This book was seen as this brutal attack on small town Midwestern life, but it is at the very least highly ambiguous and I think quite critical of the critics of the small town Midwest. Go back and read the book. I urge your listeners to take a look at what Sinclair Lewis does with the character Carol Kennicott, who comes out to me as the villain of the novel in many ways.
What would be wrong with criticizing your small town? Nothing in some ways, right? Every writer would be allowed to write something that bashed a certain town and the dynamics in it. Does it have to bring down a whole region?
Right. No, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. But what I'm saying is that this interpretation was completely one-sided. And the critics didn't see what the authors were saying and these writers were saying in other contexts. They didn't understand the overall message of these books. They didn't understand the nuance and the duality of these books.
Sure.
And so that's why I'm asking for a reconsideration of what they were saying.
In your estimation, was there an agenda? You're just trying to sell copies of The Nation that month, or was something deeper going on, or was it just a critic who saw something and probably didn't do the depth of research he needed to do?
I think that was part of it. I think this probably was a dashed off article. I don't think he probably spent a great deal of time on it. And this is Carl Van Dorn, by the way, the critic we're talking about, who some of your listeners may remember his brother was implicated in the quiz show scandals of the 1950s. It's sort of a small world, but so his brother at least got into trouble for some of the bad things he did. But Van Doren, I think we all face pressures. Anyone who's had any deadlines and as a writer, you put things together fast. And I think he thought, well, this is a very clever title, Revolt from the Village.
Sure.
And it is. and it's stuck, and we're still talking about it.
Right.
So it is. It shows the importance of packaging and branding and a memorable phrase. But what I am, what I implore your listeners to do is reconsider this idea and go back and read the other books that Sinclair Lewis wrote and listen to what Sinclair Lewis said in interviews about this idea of the revolt from the village, and listen in particular to some of the things he said later in life about how much he loved Minnesota.
Right.
And he loved the St. Croix Valley, and he loved growing up in his little town of Sauk Center. And he thought his dad was a hero in Sauk Center, who was the doctor who helped a lot of people. And he gave medicine and medical treatment to many people who couldn't afford it. And he said, you know, my dad was a saint, and I didn't mean to smear my little town in Minnesota.
So this book, the other work that you do, the work that you do with the Midwestern History Association, we're going to jump ahead a little bit and talk about a new golden age, or the revitalization of regionalism, regional history, regional literature, the celebration of culture in South Dakota and other states in the Midwest. What's the potential of that, and is it possible, or are we destined to remain flyover country to some people?
Well, a few years ago, I would have been fairly skeptical about our ability to revive the field of Midwestern history, but I have to say that the last couple of years have brought a lot of good news. We ended up forming the Midwestern History Association, which is now presided over by a professor at Iowa State University, Pamela Riney Kerberg. I passed the baton last year to her. And the organization has grown to 1,500 members or so. We have a online presence, which is very strong. And we have a very active annual conference held every year in Michigan at Grand Valley State University at the Hauenstein Center, which is presided over by Gleaves Whitney, who is very, very interested in this idea of reviving Midwestern history and has been very supportive of our efforts. I should say, since we have a big South Dakota audience here today, that the Midwestern History Association, while first conceived in the state of Wisconsin at a conference we had in Hudson, Wisconsin along the St. Croix River, was actually launched or formally created here in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, as part of the Northern Great Plains History Conference a few years ago when that conference met here. So it has deep roots in South Dakota and many South Dakota members, and that's good. And it has helped create an incentive for more publishers to be active in the field. Ohio State University Press has launched a new series on the Midwest. Notre Dame University Press has announced that they will be launching a new series on the Midwest. And we have a couple of new academic journals, Middle West Review and Studies in Midwestern History. Now, this is great news. I didn't really think this would take off to the extent it did a few years ago, but we are showing signs of life in the region. I do think a couple of critical steps that need to be taken before we can claim victory, or claim partial victory, is that we need some of the big institutions of higher education in the Midwest to take this seriously. And we need them to create a space for younger scholars who want to go earn a PhD and, say, become an expert in Midwestern history. We need a place for them to go. And so we need the Michigans of the world and Ohio States and University of Minnesota. I hate to say this, but the University of Minnesota, huge institution, 60,000 students, huge history department. They don't have one person teaching Midwestern history or a person teaching Minnesota history. That to me is something that could be fixed quite easily. We're not asking for the world here, but we need a few of these institutions to step up and help their region. And that's something that does go on in other places in the American South and the American West. There are many centers for the study of the West and the South, and they have many Southern historians and Western historians. we're lagging behind in that area, but I have my fingers crossed that we'll make some progress on that front too.
What's the role of regionalism in the realities of a global society?
Well, I think that no matter where you live, no matter how global our civilization is, no matter how interconnected we are, no matter how much we are on our iPhones, most of us are from some place. We grew up some place, and that had a influence on us. It shaped us. And in fact, this is probably having a greater influence now than it did in previous decades, because fewer Americans are moving than at any time since the 19th century. More and more people are able to stay in a place where they have connections and family and roots and a network because of the internet. They don't necessarily have to move to California or have to move to New York. Some people choose to do that, and that is fine. But for those who are interested in knowing about their place, regionalism is extremely important. I mean, there are many forms of human identity, and there are many forces that shape human identity, and one of them is where you grow up.
John Locke, always a pleasure. The new book is called From Warm Center to Ragged Edge. If you're a member of the book club through SDPB Friends, you've already gotten a copy in the mail. Otherwise, it's available wherever books are sold. Thanks so much. Come back again.
Thank you, Lori.